to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. It's a cool Thursday afternoon here in the state of Minnesota. It's Brett Johnson joined by Eric today, and it is just Eric and myself for today, as no guests lined up, but we do have some jam-packed shows coming up tomorrow, then also on Monday tomorrow. Got David Schultz back on the show. There is certainly no shortage of news to cover on both the local and the national scene. Then Monday, very happy to report, we're going to have State Senator Steve Swazinski in the studio for the entire hour. Definitely looking forward to chatting with him. Kind of thinking of that as kind of being our version of, remember when they did Brunch with Bernie on the Tom Hartman program?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of a smaller scale, being that, well, I'm Brett Johnson, I'm not Tom Hartman. And then obviously Steve Swazinski is a state representative, not a presidential candidate or someone that serves in the U.S. Senate. But still, it'll be a nice way to talk about what's going on with local and state politics. But today, just Eric and me, but we still have plenty to talk about. In fact, this entire show, I'm probably going to be sticking with state and local politics just because there is a ton to cover, so we are going to get to it in just a second. But first up, Eric, how are you doing in there today?
I'm doing all right. I'm not too upset being inside today. It's pretty crummy out.
No kidding. Exactly. Yeah. 50 degrees, a little, it was raining yesterday. I don't think we've picked up any precipitation today, but definitely moving towards fall. As we heard during Matt McNeil's show, coming up Tuesday, October 15th, we do have the next Democratic debate watching party that will be at Burger Mo's over in downtown St. Paul as we move to the east side of the metro area. We're hoping if we can keep these debate watching parties going, we're hoping to cover all sides of the metro area. We, of course, started on the west side over at the Park Tavern with the September debate. Now in October, coming up on the 15th, we'll be on the east side over at Burger Mo's, and we're hoping maybe we can get something on the north or the south side with some future debates. And I imagine, Eric, this is probably the last debate where we're going to see several candidates. I think between now and the November debates, I think we're going to see at least three or four people who are going to be on the stage on the 15th drop out of the race entirely.
Oh, God, I hope so.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's
there's a
giant repertoire of characters.
Yeah, it's not even repartee either. It's more just dueling.
Another French word that sounds similar.
Yeah, yeah. It's dueling press conferences. That's essentially what the debates turn into when you get 12 people on stage. My goodness, how are you going to hold a debate with 12 people? Well, somehow CNN is going to try to pull that off, and we encourage you to join us over at the debate watching party Tuesday, October 15th, Burger Mo's. Tickets are now available online, am950radio.com, am950radio.com. And if you order them now, you do get that special discounted price of only $15, because if you show up the day of and purchase those tickets at the door, they're going to cost you $20. So might as well purchase those tickets ahead of time for only $15 and make sure you save a little cash so maybe you can spend that over at Burger Mo's, because they most certainly do have some delicious food. All right, let's get to the state and the local news for today. So very happy to report that Quinn Nystrom has announced that she is going to be running in the 8th Congressional District against Pete Stauber. Of course, Quinn was just on Matt McNeil's show during the last hour. And Eric, I believe you are spotlighting that interview so people can go back and listen to that, correct?
Sure. Later tonight, they can find it on our website.
Absolutely. So I'm thrilled Quinn is going to be running. She's lived in that district a long time. Of course, also a diabetes advocate, and I think a very strong challenger to Pete Stauber. Joe Radinovich, I feel like his campaign back in 2018 didn't get off to the best start. Part of that was not necessarily his own fault. He, of course, was unfairly targeted with many different aspects in his campaign, one of them being unpaid parking tickets, which kind of just piled up. They were very small amounts. And then he was also accused of being a DC insider. So the Republicans were able to go after him on those issues. Fortunately, I don't think they can attack Quinn Nystrom in that same way, as she's been a great advocate for diabetes rights over the past few years. And she will be running against Pete Stauber. I don't know if anyone else has announced quite yet if they're going to be running for the DFL nomination. If there have, they're certainly not a prominent candidate. But Quinn, thus far, is the only major announcement we have for the DFL running in CD8. Also, let's talk about our other outstate candidate on behalf of the DFL. That's Dan Feehan down in CD1, Dan Feehan. He also ran back in 2018 against Pete Stauber and ended up losing by just a couple thousand votes. Eric, I remember tracking that with you and Hunter on election night back in 2018. You were doing a nice job keeping track of that in the Attorney General's race. And at one point, I think that race was down to like a difference of 7 votes or something nuts like
that.
Oh,
yeah. It was down there like single digit.
Yeah, ultimately, unfortunately, Jim Hagedorn ended up pulling through in that race. But Dan Feehan, back in the race, very happy about that because he kind of reminds me of a young Tim Walz, where he's been someone that who's lived in that district for a long time. He's former military, very in touch with rural issues, and he's one of those people that I feel like if he can eventually get into Congress in that first congressional district, he would be a very tough incumbent to beat, similar to how Walz was very tough to beat, and also how I think going to the metro area, Dean Phillips is going to be a very tough incumbent to beat. So hopefully we can get Dan Feehan into the first congressional district. But as we talked about during the last hour, got to make sure you go out there and vote. But I do like where Dan Feehan stands on one issue. And Colin Peterson, you might want to take notes on where Dan Feehan stands on impeachment. So Dan Feehan has actually come out in favor of the impeachment inquiry against Donald Trump, unlike Colin Peterson, who's kind of been toeing the line and not necessarily saying what he wants to do with that. Here's the quote from Roll Call. National Democrats are excited about the return of Feehan, who's an Iraq war veteran, but Feehan knows he needs to distance himself from what's going on in Washington, D.C. He supports the impeachment inquiry that Speaker Pelosi announced last week, but he's not planning on talking about it much in Minnesota. He says, this is Feehan speaking, it's not something I'm focused on. I'm worried it will become the single and sole focus of Washington when the farm economy is on the brink and prescription drug prices are on the rise. So I like where he comes down on this because he says, yeah, you know, I am in favor of the impeachment inquiry, but he also realizes that in his district, it might not be the most important issue to some of his voters, especially when you see what's happening with the ag economy. So I think he's found a nice balance on where to stand on impeachment without making it the centerpiece of his campaign or the centerpiece of what he does. And like I said, Colin Peterson, take notes on that, because I think even a similar stance from Colin Peterson probably wouldn't get him in a lot of trouble with some of his voters. But as I've said on previous programs, after 2020, I think it's unlikely that Colin Peterson's district will even exist anymore, as we're very likely to go from 8 to 7 congressional districts. And that, of course, means redistricting going to be very big after 2020. Of course, I've talked about redistricting and gerrymandering many times here on the program. And I do want to touch on this again because MinnPost and our friend Peter Callahan wrote a really interesting piece on what's happening with both the Democrats and the Republicans on redistricting, because both parties are putting an extra focus on it coming up in 2020. One of the mistakes that happened in 2010 was that, well, Republicans were locked in and ready to win a lot of key races. Democrats, unfortunately, were kind of asleep at the wheel back in 2010. But fortunately, it appears things are changing, as we actually do have a new committee in charge of redistricting on the national level for Democrats that's going to be focusing on specific races, including some in Minnesota. And this is, again, written in MinnPost. This is talking about the National Democratic Redistricting Committee, which is also, I believe, headed by former Attorney General Eric Holder. That, along with the Republican version, which is called Right Lines 2020, very catchy name. Both national organizations have included Minnesota and also Wisconsin in their redistricting campaign, looking at the fact that they have to win several key races to be able to, well, draw their own districts. Now, here's why I bring this up, because in Peter Callahan's piece in MinnPost, he actually posted a picture of what the proposed districts were from Republicans after 2010. Because let's go back in time for a second. If you go back to 2010, you might remember that Republicans were able to win majorities in both the state House of Representatives and the state Senate. Fortunately, we were protected from the type of gerrymandering that we saw in Wisconsin because, Mark Dayton was able to win the governorship by 9,000 votes, and therefore he was able to veto these Republican-drawn maps that would have redistricted Minnesota into some very red territory. So Peter Callahan over at MinnPost posted pictures of the Republican districts that would have been drawn in 2010 had we had a Governor Tom Emmer instead of a Mark Dayton. And here's why, again, so many of these local and state legislative races are so important, because I went through and looked at the differences between what the maps are today versus what they could have been if the Republican maps of 2010 in Minnesota had gone through. The biggest change is that, of course, CD8, that's northern Minnesota, includes the Iron Range and even parts of the northern exurbs, that would have changed dramatically. Instead, it would have been cut off just a little bit south of Duluth and included what's now part of Congressional District 7. Basically, this proposed 8th district drawn by Republicans in 2010 would have included basically the northern one-third of Minnesota. Looking further, CD1 would have included more of southern Minnesota. It would have included what's now part of CD7 in western Minnesota, therefore making CD1 more Republican. The 7th district would have been really, really weird looking. It kind of would have been an extension around CD6. It would have been a circle around what's currently Tom Emmer's district and what formerly used to be Michelle Bachmann's district, therefore also making that much more Republican. Now, the metro area is where we would have seen some massive problems, because the proposed district of CD3, that would have included parts of Carver County. Right now, Carver County is actually in the 6th district, and it's typically a Republican area. That would have actually been in the 3rd district, and if we had had those lines, very unlikely Dean Phillips would have beaten Eric Paulson back in 2018. One other change, if you live in eastern Ramsey County, that's currently part of Betty McCollum's district. Well, that would now be part of CD6 if we had had those Republican lines. CD2 also would have included what's now part of CD1, kind of the northern districts of CD1, also very Republican. So it boils down to this. If we had those maps actually put through by the Republicans, we pretty much would have been guaranteed 6 of our 8 congressional seats heavy Republican. They basically would have jammed all the Democratic voters into CD4 and CD5. Those are 2 seats now, of course, held by Ilhan Omar and Betty McCollum. So just the fact that 9,000 votes, that difference for Mark Dayton in 2010, that basically saved Democrats on the national level at least 3 congressional seats. Right now, we, of course, have 5 DFLers that serve in the U.S. House of Representatives, only 3 Republicans. With these proposed maps of 2010, likely would have had 6 Republicans and 2 Democrats. That's the difference 9,000 votes can make. But let's go back to this MinnPost piece that Peter was writing about with what's being targeted by both the Republican Redistricting Committee and the Democratic Redistricting Committee. So this Republican committee, again, it's called Right Lines 2020. They actually broke this down in a really interesting way at a real micro level, which shows how closely they're targeting certain races. They say winning 49 legislative seats in 12 states could determine as many as 146 seats in Congress. That's about one-third of Congress could be determined by what happens in just 49 legislative seats in 12 states. 2 of those 49 races are actually in Minnesota. I went to the Right Lines 2020 website. I couldn't figure out which districts they were actually targeting, but I have a pretty good idea that they probably include SD 44 in Plymouth. That's currently represented by Paul Anderson. He's a Republican in the Plymouth area, and the 2 House seats in Senate District 4 are actually currently represented by 2 DFLers, so that certainly is a target for a seat that could be flipped. And I'm guessing they probably also are including Senate District 58. That's represented right now by State Senator Matt Little. He's a Democrat, but he won that race by only a few hundred votes in his last election. So encourage you to check this out because, again, this is super important for 2020, redistricting. If we have a bad year again for Democrats in 2020, well, we're probably going to lock in another 8 years of Republican control of the House of Representatives. I mean, it took a massive effort even to flip the U.S. House from Republicans to Democrats in 2018. It took about a +8 in the national popular vote among House races to actually flip the House. And that's only going to continue if we have more gerrymandered districts written after 2020. So I encourage you to check this out over at MinnPost by Peter Callahan. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. All right, coming up next, I want to follow up on a story you might remember from the state fair. If you remember back on Labor Day, people were generally delayed leaving the state fair because of a fight that took place. Well, we actually have a follow-up on what happened with that because someone has been charged in that case, and there's an interesting aspect I want to address with what was just reported today in the Pioneer Press. We'll talk about that up next here on the Repartee.
Like most Minnesotans, Standard Heating and Air Conditioning loves the fall colors. The oranges, reds, yellows, and now, with Standard's Fall into Savings sale, you could be seeing a lot more green this fall. As in saving $1,600 or more when you get a new high-efficiency furnace installed by October 31st. Find out more about how you can rake in at least $1,600 in savings on your new furnace at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
Northeast Minneapolis is known for its creativity, and you'll know exactly why when you eat at Hazel's Northeast. Their creatively prepared comfort food will have you coming back week after week. Breakfasts like biscuits and gravy, granola pancakes, and brisket hash. For lunch, homemade soup and one of the best Reubens in town. And don't miss the daily risotto or Chef Ali's ever-changing dinner specials. Come on in. Bring the whole family. Hazel's Northeast delivers real good food. Family-owned at 29th and Johnson in Minneapolis.
Join Quorum as they celebrate their 26th annual National Coming Out Day Luncheon presented by U.S. Bank. This inspirational luncheon gives voice to the power of living openly, honestly, and with authenticity. Coming out still matters. The National Coming Out Day Luncheon is a reminder that doing so creates new advocates for equality. Reserve your tickets today for Friday, October 11th. The National Coming Out Day Luncheon will be at the Hyatt Regency Minneapolis at 1300 Nicolet Mall. The Marketplace Expo opens at 10 a.m. and the luncheon will begin at 11:45. Tickets are available to members for $49 or non-members for $59. Guest speakers include A. Charlene Leach of the P. Fund Foundation, Stuart Milk of the Harvey Milk Foundation, Justin Nelson, co-founder of the National LGBT Chamber of Commerce, Tori Fix, a local hip-hop artist, WCCO's Mike Augustianak, and AM 950's Ellie Krug. Opening remarks will be made by House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler. Learn more, purchase your tickets at TwinCitiesQuorum.com. TwinCities, QUORUM.com. Habitation Furnishing and Design is simply the best furniture design studio in the Twin Cities. What is a furniture design studio? It's a place where you'll find professional interior designers who are there to help you select the perfect furniture. A single sofa or an entire home. Our designers love making spaces exceptional. When you're shopping for furniture, it makes sense to talk to a professional. Habitation Furnishing and Design, 4317 Excelsior Boulevard in St. Louis Park.
Hey, it's Brett from the 4 p.m. show, and I got a crazy question for you. Is your home ready for the holidays? Yeah, I know it seems way too soon to be talking holidays, but they will sneak up on you. That's why I just use Zero Res to clean my carpet, so come holiday season, I'll have at least one thing off my checklist. And right now, Zero Res has an awesome carpet cleaning deal. Three-room Zero Resified starting at only $149. But you need to mention AM 950 when you call. So call 9520-RES, mention AM950, and you'll be ahead of those sneaky holidays.
We're back on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Tell you what, Eric, Hunter got me going on that carpet cleaning with Zero Res. Hunter was originally the carpet cleaning czar here at AM 950. He's kind of turned me on to using Zero Res. I think you might have to be next, getting Zero Res out at your place. Got to get those rooms Zero Resified and prepped for the holidays there. Get those nice and clean. Are you hosting any holiday gatherings where you live, or don't you know yet? Too far ahead?
It's too far ahead.
Yeah.
It'll sneak up on me, though.
Yeah. I did get that reminder. They come up much quicker than you think because as soon as Halloween's over, Christmas pretty much moves in. I mean, we kind of given up on our retail stores of waiting until Black Friday to start selling the Christmas decorations. No, it pretty much starts November 1st, right after Halloween. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Just to follow up on what I was talking about with redistricting, it basically boils down to this. Both the Democrats and the Republicans with their redistricting committees are going to be targeting certain districts at a very micro level. And I think if you live in Plymouth or Lakeville, you are going to see an extra amount of money spent on your races, since I imagine those are two of the districts that are going to be targeted by Democrats and Republicans, because not only will they control or determine who will control the state Senate here in Minnesota, they also, as we talked about, are going to have a massive impact on who controls the U.S. House of Representatives. So I want to follow up on something that happened at the state fair. So again, on Labor Day, a lot of people were delayed leaving on Labor Day because a fight broke out. They had to bring the cops in there. And basically, I think they even closed one of the gates. So it basically just made a huge bottleneck in terms of leaving the state fair. Very glad I was there in the morning. I was not there in the evening, because that would have been a nightmare trying to not get out of the state fair till like midnight or 1 a.m., then have to come to work the next day. But here's what the Pioneer Press is reporting, because a man who basically sucker punched another guy, which kind of led to the incident of all this havoc at the state fair, well, he was just charged. A 22-year-old St. Paul man was convicted by a jury of first-degree assault and will spend a year in jail for causing a traumatic brain injury to a Little Canada man he punched outside the Minnesota State Fair last summer. Now, there's one detail out of this story I'm going to not tell you about. I will tell you after, though, and I think it'll kind of put a whole new perspective on what's happened. But Ramsey County District Judge Sarah Gruing stayed Gunnar McClellan's 8-year prison sentence and placed him on probation for the next 10 years in a court hearing yesterday. So again, Gunnar McClellan was the guy who sucker punched another person, and he was, of course, arrested, and that's what led to the delays leaving the state fair on Labor Day. She also ordered McClellan to complete 100 hours of community service aimed at working with people with brain injuries, enroll in anger management classes, and abstain from drugs and alcohol. Now, here's the key part. The sentence was a departure from state guidelines, though, which actually recommended a 6 to 9 year sentence for the defendant, and for defendants like McClellan, I should say, who are convicted of first-degree assault but have no prior criminal record. So he was supposed to get 6 to 9 years in prison, but instead, well, he's getting his sentence stayed, and he's basically going on probation and community service.
That seems like a lot. 6 to 9 years?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, think of Amber Geiger. She just got 10 for murder.
Only 10, that's right. Yeah, I was actually surprised she didn't get more. Well, I shouldn't say surprised.
I'm surprised she was charged.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Because if we lived in an actual real justice system where people were treated equally, yeah, she should have gotten a lot more than 10. But I'm certainly with you that, yeah, that she was even found guilty in the first place. I'm kind of with you where her serving any prison time is sadly kind of a surprise. But yeah, in this case, state guidelines say he's supposed to get 6 to 9 years in prison, but the judge ended up staying his sentence. Now, here's the point I want to bring up with this, because when I remember hearing about this on Twitter, it was breaking on some of the local newscasts, and I think there was also some thunderstorms going around. That's why I was also watching the news at this point. They were breaking into news coverage talking about how a man was arrested at the state fair, and it led to all sorts of delays. Initially, it was kind of reported on Twitter. This wasn't by any specific news organizations, but the consensus was on Twitter and other social media was that this was gang activity. And of course, gang activity is pretty much code word for someone who's black, right? So here's the little thing about this story. Gunnar McClellan, actually a white guy. And the only thing I have to question here is, would his sentence have been stayed if he was not white? I don't think it would have been. If the state recommended 6 to 9 years for what he had done and he was not a white man, I think there's a pretty good chance he would have actually seen all of that time. Of course, as you were talking about, Eric, that's an entirely different question as to whether those sentencing guidelines are actually morally correct. But that is an aspect right there, that this is a white guy And he's basically going to be kind of getting a slap on the wrist for causing a very traumatic brain injury to the man he sucker punched, because right now the guy he punched basically has lost his sense of smell. He has a severe concussion. He gets headaches all the time. He has personality changes. So he's really severely affected this guy's life, and he's basically only going on probation. And again, if he weren't a white guy, I would say there's a pretty good chance he would be seeing several years in prison. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Up next on the program, going to talk about vaping, because part of the question is, what can government do to try to crack down on vaping? We've seen several governors around the country actually try to ban certain types of vaping. Well, turns out that actually can't happen in Minnesota due to a certain state statute. We're going to talk more about that up next, right after the news.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
We decided about 2 weeks ago to chart a pretty unusual path forward. We wanted to give an unvarnished look at the reality of what it takes to fund a presidential campaign.
That was Adisu DeMessi, campaign manager for New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. The senator is still in the running for president after a cliffhanger of a fundraising appeal. The campaign successfully raised $1.7 million in the days before the end of the September cutoff, after letting supporters know Booker would drop out otherwise. Third quarter fundraising numbers are coming out ahead of the mid-October Federal Election Commission filing deadline. The financial snapshots give an indication of the more popular candidates. Ahead of 2020, six of the more than 20 presidential candidates have out-fundraised the rest, but one more so than any other. Here's Brendan Quinn of the Center for Responsive Politics.
President Trump, he made the unusual move of filing for re-election the day of his inauguration, which is somewhat unprecedented. So he's had quite a bit more time to raise money, because he's technically been raising money for 2020 since January of 2017. In terms of the Democrats, we do have five candidates who are vastly outraising their opponents. That's former Vice President Joe Biden, Senators Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and Kamala Harris, and South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Those five have qualified for the November Democratic debate. 12 will be at the October 15th contest in Cleveland. All on one night, the most presidential candidates ever to share the stage. Candidates have many methods of fundraising, some with limits on contributions, like campaign committees, which pull from individuals, and political action committees, or PACs. This election cycle, the maximum an individual can give is $800, and the max for a PAC is $5,000. There are also super PACs that can contribute unlimited funds. Corporations can't give to campaign committees, but they can give to super PACs.
For campaign committees and super PACs, that money is required to be disclosed.
However, contributions from nonprofit organizations and trade associations are often called dark money because
they are not required to disclose their donors. We also see these groups giving significantly to super PACs as well.
So, very powerful funders can hide what eventually goes to super PACs. In recent years, candidates have started to draw lines for themselves when it comes to campaign fundraising to avoid the appearance that they're beholden to certain interests.
A lot of people, last cycle and this cycle, especially on the Democratic side, are rejecting any money from corporate PACs.
But despite campaign finance regulations, money seems to have a way of working through the system even without corporate PACs. In the first year of the 2016 election cycle, there was 10 times as much dark money as there was in 2012. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
Being in the Army National Guard is about more than serving your country. It's about being there for your community when your neighbors need you most. The Army National Guard makes college affordable, and serving part-time can help you graduate debt-free. Do you want to stay close to friends and family? The Guard allows you to serve close to home. Serving part-time in the Army National Guard lets you have the life you want. Learn more by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard, aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
with your AM 950 weather. This is Eric Nelson. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with a low around 40. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high near 56. And tomorrow night, the chance of rain with a low around 48. Saturday, thunderstorms with a high of 60 and a low around 47. Ferndale Market is a third-generation family-owned turkey farm. Started in 1939, they are proud to still bear founder Fern Peterson's name. You can find their turkeys all over Minnesota in local grocery stores. Check out what makes them different at ferndalemarket.com.
We're back on the 4 o'clock repartee. It's just Brett and Eric today, no guests. But again, tomorrow, Monday, have some big shows planned. Coming up tomorrow, David Schultz is going to join us for most of the program. Certainly no shortage of political topics to get his analysis on. Then on Monday, we'll have State Senator Steve Swazinski in studio for the entire hour. And also have a great conversation lined up next week with John Nichols over at The Nation magazine. But today, just Eric and Brett, and there is plenty of local news to cover. So before we went to break, I was talking about vaping and what Governor Walz could potentially do about vaping. And, well, the short answer is not a whole lot. And why? Well, because of 9/11, of all things. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. But do want to read a comment from our Facebook post and or our Facebook feed, I should say. And Matt pretty much, I think, hits the nail on the head with kind of my feelings on vaping. Matt says, "I'm not a fan of vaping, but compared to guns, vaping is small potatoes." And I think he's absolutely right. I mean, I've never been a smoker my entire life. Therefore, I'm not really familiar with the vaping community. I'm not sure about you, Eric, how familiar you are with vaping.
I actually used vaping to quit smoking.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So I'm in favor of vaping. I don't really see – I think it seemed like an easy win for the Republicans to go
after. I would say it's probably not the healthiest thing in the world, but it's got to be about 10 times healthier than actually smoking cigarettes, correct?
I mean, I think most of the health problems people have ran into have been from, like, clandestine labs creating their own mixtures in unsanitary conditions.
Right. Or the guy – I'm trying to think
the
of the guy who
elements
was a,
or things like that.
And I know there was a guy who I think was busted for bringing in some sort of vaping product that was illegally shipped in. So you wonder if somehow –
A lot of it comes from China, and a lot of it just comes from home labs.
Yeah, so I'm kind of with you on that if you're going along these lines, and I know you got to get the phone right now, that this seems to be caused not from really vaping itself, the epidemic, or the so-called epidemic that's going on. I think it's more that we've had some bad batches going through, as Eric was saying, with some of these coming from China, some of these shipped in illegally, including the guy who was arrested in Minneapolis a few weeks ago. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you on that, Eric. But I do have some kind of surprising numbers. We'll get to Governor Walz in just one second and what he can do on vaping. But I do first want to read about some stats on vaping because these were actually just released by the AP on teens and vaping. And I'm actually shocked by these numbers. 1 in 4 Minnesota 11th graders reported using an e-cigarette in the past 30 days. And Minnesota youth are poorly informed about the potential health risks of vaping. But, wow, that is a really high number. A quarter of all 11th graders in Minnesota have vaped at some point. Numbers for 8th graders are also very high as well, as a study just found that it was, where is it right here? It is 11% of 8th graders in Minnesota have also vaped in their lifetime so far. So it certainly is something to deal with for teenagers out there. And I'm very surprised by those numbers. A quarter of all 11th graders have vaped at some point. So the question is, what can be done about vaping? And, well, is it even worth doing anything about vaping? Because as I was kind of saying, I think it's more that we're just having some bad product that's being shipped into Minnesota and the rest of the country. But other states have attempted to take action, unilateral action, at least through their governors. Massachusetts has announced a 4-month ban on the sale of all e-cigarettes as part of its emergency response. Deaths linked to the devices. New York, Rhode Island, and Washington have also declared emergencies. But in Minnesota, well, nothing can be done because of kind of a weird state statute that we have in the state that prevents Governor Walz from doing anything about it. So unlike in other states, Minnesota's executive actually lacks any legal authority to declare a health emergency or to take action to stop the distribution of vaping products, even those that might be aimed at kids. And it's kind of interesting about why we can't actually have the governor do anything about it. It's actually because of a Minnesota statute that was passed just after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, of all things. That law which was called the Minnesota Emergency Health Powers Act, authorized the governor to respond to bioterrorism incidents and to declare public health emergencies, which could be interpreted to also cover vaping, according to MinnPost. That statute, however, actually ended after 2005, and because the legislator decided not to renew it, well, that basically means Walls, even if he wanted to do anything, couldn't. And of course, the question is, should we even do anything about it? Because if we're looking at vaping as being an epidemic here in this country, well, then obviously gun violence, I would say, is a whole lot more damaging than vaping. You can also look even at alcohol-related deaths.
Mainly I look at tobacco.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the most close analogy. Mm-hmm. And it's clearly more dangerous than vaping, even now when they're making a hysterical media circus of it.
Yeah, and you're not seeing anyone claiming that we should ban cigarettes completely. I mean, there's probably a minority of people that think we should ban cigarettes in their entirety, but that's not really the popular opinion among, well, most people in the country and elected officials. But yeah, as you said, cigarettes, certainly more of an epidemic than vaping. I don't even like the term using epidemic in terms of vaping, because I don't think that's even necessarily the case.
Yeah, that's like, we have an epidemic of the common cold. Can it be an epidemic if it's kind of minor?
Yeah, it kind of makes the term actually lose meaning. Again, I'm not saying vaping is healthy for you. It's probably not, but it certainly is, as you're saying, Eric, a lot better than actually smoking a cigarette. And as we were talking about, gun violence, more of an epidemic than vaping. Drinking, more of an epidemic than vaping. Yet we're not really seeing much of a serious push to ban tobacco or alcohol or anything like that in its entirety. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Hey, let's go to the phone lines and talk to Mark in Fridley. Hey there, Mark.
Yeah, don't forget obesity, too. That's the number one leading cause of death.
Yeah, we're not seeing bans on food altogether
either. Soda,
yeah.
Not bad on that triple Whopper, bacon, double cheese. But anyway, I want to double down on what you guys talked about yesterday with Aaron Clems and how mm-hmm. critical this is. And this goes back to what you just talked about, was the disparity of the ruling by a judge on giving a kid probation as opposed to 6 years to basically killing somebody. But there were some what appeared to be positive news. I have a niece that lives in northeast Minneapolis, right across from the river, and across the street from the river. And there was a plant called Northern Metals that was a recycling plant, and it's been there for years, and it's been spewing toxic, carcinogenic heavy metals all over northeast Minneapolis for years. Well, they shut it down, and you would think that that would be a good thing. And I think it was Aaron Clem's group, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy.
Used to be with Friends of the Boundary Water, so yeah, very familiar with the issue I think you're talking about, Mark, but continue.
But here's what happened, okay? This company was allowed to operate and spew toxic heavy metals, carcinogenic. They created health problems like heart attacks and bronchitis and asthma and cancer, and actually affected people's mental faculties because of the lead in the air. And they were finally shut down. And you would think that that would be a good thing, but guess what? They were also caught manipulating by a whistleblower, manipulating and willfully altering the records keeping that they provided to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, for which there was no penalty. So,
That sounds like what's happening with PolyMet right now.
Yeah, it sounds like what's happening. Opioids killed 600,000 people, and these guys are going to get away with paying a fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this plant, and this was the Attorney General Keith Ellison, who you know, shut this thing down. But when you have willful criminal falsification of documents that were lawfully ordered to be maintained, people should go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
The impact of what these people inhaled for generations will be with these people for years. Now, here's why I think this eventually happened. Again, they were caught, they cheated, they lied, and they spewed toxic. This is like Flint and New Jersey drinking water, but it was airborne. Here's what it was. A week before this announcement, it was also announced that they were building million-dollar condos in northeast Minneapolis. And what I think happened was the real estate developers thought, huh, who's going to buy a $1 million condo if they're going to inhale chemicals from a plant across the river? So it got shut down. So is this what happened? Was that allowed to pollute and contaminate Northeast Minneapolis for decades up until the point when millionaires were going into Northeast Minneapolis to buy their $1 million condos? You know, the government didn't care about the residents of Northeast Minneapolis until it was the one percenters and then this action. But why these people got off, and what they did was they simply moved up to Becker, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, good for them. They're going to pollute up there.
Yeah, certainly, if not a correlation, definitely something else. Yeah, just happened to be that when the millionaires moved in, oh, yeah, I guess we'll crack down on them now. Yeah, very much a coincidence there, Mark. Absolutely.
And this is the stuff we have to talk about. We have to talk about the corruption and the fraud associated to Minlars. We have to look at the fraud and corruption associated to, you know, being told that lottery tickets or pull tabs are going to pay for the Met Stadium. We have to look at the fraud and corruption in government, and these people are just simply allowed to walk away after doing massive institutional damage to the community.
All right. Thanks so much for the call there, Mark. And, yeah, you hit the nail on the head because, as we've seen with the company Bayer, which faced a $1 billion lawsuit, well, guess what? Actually, they were forced to pay a fine of a multi-$1 billion lawsuit. Oh, yeah, their stock price went up. No one went to jail, of course, after the Wall Street crash. And as we talked about yesterday with Aaron Clems on the program, on those mining permits for PolyMet, if they don't get Glencore on the name of those permits, well, basically, if we do end up having an environmental disaster in Minnesota, well, PolyMet's just going to say, oh, no, we're out of business. I guess we can't really pay you back for any fines we're going to be facing. That's why it's very important to get Glencore, of course, on those permits, because someone actually needs to be held responsible if we end up building those mines in the first place. And, well, I suppose even if we get Glencore's name on those permits, as Mark was talking about, very unlikely anyone would see any jail time should we have some sort of environmental disaster. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Got full phone lines. So tell you what, we are going to take a break in just a second and run the rest of the phone lines. Also do have a few more local stories to touch on, but you are listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, and we will be back with your phone calls up next.
Being a true American means more than just baseball, blue jeans, and rock and roll. Being an American also means taking responsibility. So if you're a man turning 18, do your part. Register with Selective Service. It keeps you eligible for college loans, government jobs, and job training. Plus, it's the law. To register, log on to www.sss.gov or pick up a Selective Service registration card at any post office. Be a man and register.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak.
And I'm Adam Ostrowski.
We are here at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to talk about outdoor fires. Sitting around a fire is the oldest, most basic form of human activity.
What's new is in the way fire is burned. We can show you how to burn cleaner with a lot less smoke.
The radiant heat and light from an open fire is unmatched. It kindles our spirits and connects us to the outdoors. And now it's easier to experience and enjoy.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces sells and installs wood and gas burning fire pits and fireplaces. Let us help you experience an outdoor fire without all the smoke.
Come see the many ways you can enjoy a fire outdoors.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces has over 35 working wood and gas units on display at the corner of East Franklin and Riverside Avenue in Minneapolis. More information at woodlandstoves.com. Find the fire that works for you. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. We're at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Today is indeed a live show, so would love to have your phone calls. And again, reminder, we have some great shows coming up tomorrow with David Schultz, then Senator Steve Swaczynski on Monday. Have some more local news to cover, including college Republicans putting up a mural on campus, and then, of course, getting it vandalized because, well, they were trying to build a quasi-Trump wall type of monument. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. But let's run the phone lines and go to David in Shakopee. Hey there, David. How you doing?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, David, so there we go.
I've been with Vapor for 9 years now. Mm-hmm. And what people need to avoid is if the Washington Post had an article on the 27th in their health section about this, that different states did investigations on it. And the majority of the products that people are using are products that they either contain THC or vitamin E. They're trying to do things other than vape with them. They're trying to either get high or they're trying to supplement their vitamins with vaping, and that's not what it's designed for. You have to look for products that contain only PG, polyglycol, or VG, vegetable glycerin, or a mix of the two is fine. Avoid stuff that has, polydectyl, it's a buttery flavors, you want to avoid those, and definitely avoid menthol. You can do it like a wintergreen, but menthol requires menthol crystals, and those are bad in cigarettes or in vaping.
So what you're kind of saying is, David, yeah, it's a great way, as Eric was talking about too, it's a great way to try to quit cigarettes, but if you're using it, yeah, to maybe get high
Mark, I was so sick. I was so sick. I would cough every night in the middle of the night. It would wait, and my ex-wife would wake me up and say, go to the bathroom because you're coughing. And I could not stop coughing. I'd go outside into the Minnesota winter, and the air would hit my lungs, and I couldn't breathe, and I'd start coughing. I switched to vaping, and in two weeks, I could breathe again.
Wow!
And over the last 9 years, I did it wrong at first, and I was going way too high with the nicotine content. Mm-hmm. I was starting vaping at 36 milligrams. I'm now down to 3 milligrams. The next bottle I buy tomorrow will be at 1.5 until I get down to 0 mil, and then I'll be quitting.
So really,
I was never going to quit smoking. It was not going to happen. I tried everything, and I have not had a cigarette in 9 years.
Wow!
Because of it,
that's
I was smoking 2 packs a day.
That's awesome, David. So, and what you're saying is too, if people are going to switch to vaping, it's important that they actually educate themselves on what exactly they're buying. Is that kind of what you're saying too?
Absolutely.
All right, David, thanks so much for the call. Good information because, yeah, as David was saying, Eric, you were saying, a lot of people have used vaping to quit cigarettes, so it certainly does have some benefits. And ultimately, it is about educating yourself on how to use it properly. But I still do think there is something more going on with this so-called epidemic with vaping. But yeah, unfortunately, it kind of reminds me of the war on drugs we had back in the 80s where we're having everyone completely overreact to what's happening with vaping.
Especially with this, it's so brand new.
Yeah.
That I think there's a lot of hysteria surrounding it.
Yeah, it totally reminds me of the 80s where we had...
Because we're seeing news stories about individual cases of people going to the hospital.
Yeah.
Are we showing news stories about every single person who goes to the hospital for lung cancer because they have to get a new stoma put in, something like that?
Right. Exactly. You have to certainly put things in perspective. Let's go to one more phone call. We got Gary in Minneapolis. Oh, talking about a ban on poverty. I like where you're going with that, Gary. What do you think?
Well, we had something similar. We had a war on poverty under LBJ, and Kennedy was after it, too. Bobby used to go down to Appalachia, and... They worked on racial issues and bring up minority races, too, into the mainstream middle class and working class prosperity. And then it was working. LBJ's poverty program, he had advertised all the time, get a good job, get a good education. Education was a big part of it. And it was working. See, the government was being used in a positive way to help people's lives. And then along came, the people got kind of, I don't know what you call it, they got goofy. And, well, we got to go to the Republicans to stop this abuse of welfare and busing and all this stuff, the Republicans scapegoating stuff. And so they elected Republicans most of the time, and it got worse and worse and worse, and they cut the government programs. And so it was war on government instead, so then they killed a lot of it. Was working real good until the Republicans came in. So they create poverty by this war on government. So that's what's happened. And we got the biggest, it's well known, we got the biggest inequality of any developed, whatever you call developed country is. And I'll leave with a statement. Gandhi said poverty is the worst violence there is, and the desperation that comes with it itself. So that's about it. The need, Roosevelt had something also to stop the need for want, you know, enough food, housing, and he died at the time he had an expansion of his New Deal and health care. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Gary. I thought you were going to run out of steam there for a second, but Gary caught a little bit of a second win there, able to finish his point. But, yeah, to expand on what Gary was saying, yeah, any coincidence that as soon as we started shrinking the social safety nets back in the 70s and 80s, we've seen, well, an increase in poverty in this country. Yeah, no coincidence at all. Let's go to Lynette in Chaska. I kind of like where Lynette's going as well, talking about anti-vaping with that campaign maybe being related to big tobacco. Is that kind of where you're going, Lynette?
Yeah, speaking of coincidences, you know, I'm really allergic to cigarette smoke, and I've had a problem with living in apartment buildings where the smoke is coming in. I had a lady vaping in a car with me one day, and I didn't even know she was doing it. So I thought it was interesting that it didn't bother me, like the vaping smoke, but a cigarette smoke, just, I can't handle it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But what you were just saying, though, I think that's what's behind this, is because I've also heard this, that people say, this has helped me to quit smoking. Well, the tobacco companies don't want that to happen. So I think that's a very good point that you're bringing up.
All right. Thanks so much for the call there, Lynette. And yeah, probably not a coincidence. Yeah, been a kind of show where we've had today talking about coincidence or not. Is it a coincidence that we stopped poisoning our waters in Northeast Minneapolis, as Mark was saying, as soon as we had a bunch of millionaires that wanted to move in? Also, is it a coincidence that when we have people quitting smoking because they're vaping instead, that all of a sudden vaping's an epidemic and we must ban it? Yeah, have to wonder if those are all coincidences. All right, one more news story before we have to wrap up our show for today, and this has to do with the college Republicans over at the University of Minnesota. So every fall, student organizations at the University of Minnesota paint a panel on the Washington Avenue Bridge. It's supposed to be a fun way to promote activities while making the walkway just a little more colorful. But this year's university's chapter of the College Republicans painted sort of an homage, I guess, to Pink Floyd, which is a grid of brown bricks captioned Donald Trump, the Wall. Each brick contained a reference to one of Trump's accomplishments. So, as you might expect, for the fourth year in a row, their mural got vandalized. No surprise at all. And, of course, I'm sure there's an uproar with some of the college Republicans saying, well, Democrats don't like free speech. Why are they vandalizing our mural? Well, someone in the comments section on the city page has posted about it. I think kind of summed this up the best way. When you sleep with the dogs, you wake up with the fleas. And also, too, if you looked at what was on this wall that the college Republicans in Minnesota painted again, they on each brick, they wrote an accomplishment. I use accomplishment in air quotes on each brick. And they were referencing things like fighting fake news, stopping immigration. So you kind of see where they're going. So, yeah, if you're putting up something that is intentionally inflammatory, you probably shouldn't be surprised when it gets vandalized. So not saying I endorse the vandalism of the College Republicans mural. But you do? Yeah. But
Eric, not the radio.
Yeah.
Eric Nelson does.
Eric Nelson does. All right. Sounds good. You're going to go ahead and endorse that. But I just think, yeah, you're kind of asking for trouble if you're going to put up some really terrible messages on a mural. So, yeah, I can see why you might be in favor of that. But, yeah, I'm not going to condone or also condemn it either. I'm going to take the middle ground. I'm going to take the Colin Peterson stance on that. All right, that's all the time we have for today on the Repartee. You know what that means. You hear the music? That's all the time we have. We'll talk to you tomorrow.